the fans deserve.
I'd consider myself a realist, all right, but in philosophical terms, I'm what's called a pessimist.
The show that the city needs.
This town deserves a better class of sports radio. And we're going to give it to them.
This is Talk Sports with John Reed and Cody McClure.
Leave one wolf alive, and the sheep are never safe.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves. Happy Tuesday to you as we come into the Fan Run Studios. John Reed, Cody McClure, Ben Lee, Cam, gang's all here. How are we today? Thumbs up from Ben Lee, Cody McClure.
Doing pretty well, John. Sorry, our sticks are touching again. It always bothers me when our sticks touch.
I don't know what's happened over there.
The microphones.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody did something in here. Things are not normal.
It's been this way for about a week or two.
Things have changed in the room for some reason. Anyway, I'm doing well. Good to be here. Good to be anywhere. Pretty busy. Very busy today. As you know, we're getting ready for our move.
Yeah.
And trying to get things in order for that. So,
okay.
Just working on that right now.
How's that going? Stressful?
Yeah. I'm just trying to get some stuff together, get some boxes together and, you know, all that. You know where I can get some boxes for free?
How big of boxes do you need?
Varying sizes. Medium-sized boxes, maybe a couple of big boxes.
I know that the liquor store is usually a good bet for boxes. You know, usually they have leftover cases. Apparently, things of that nature.
Yeah. Apparently, we have one box just outside the studio here. Ben was holding up.
Okay, so you got at least one?
Maybe. I don't know whose it is. It's from that that whiteboard, I guess. Well, that's not going to work. I can't fit anything in it. But anyway, I got to get some boxes together. And other than that, you know, just trying to figure out switching over the cable or the electric and all that stuff. So, you know how it is when you start moving stuff. It's just kind of a process.
No, it's awful.
I mean, yeah, it is. But once you get settled in, it's great.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. It's the getting ready to move and then moving that is awful.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it here at Fan Run Radio.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we have, what, three of our I mean, do we have 12 on-air hosts? So a fourth of our on-air talent is going to be living together.
Pretty much, yeah. It'll be a nice spot for anybody else to come hang out. Anyone else from the crew, you know?
Sure.
I doubt anyone will, but we'll invite everyone regardless.
Cool.
And by everyone, I mean the people in this room. That's about it.
I was also doing some house stuff today, trying to get some furniture bought and stuff before the show. So we're kind of on the same path a little bit.
A little bit, but you're further along on the...
Oh, yeah. No, I'm already moved in. Moved in February. It's just we haven't necessarily filled out the entire house. So now we're trying to get to that phase of the experience. In the sports world last night, you had Michigan take game one of the College World Series. You had the NBA award show. No real surprises there, although there are a couple of interesting things coming out of it. And locally here, you had kind of what we hinted at yesterday when we had Jesse Simonton from VolQuest come on talking about Keyshawn Lawrence and talking about the in-state recruiting. Would you agree, disagree when I say that that's the story of the day, Tennessee landing a big-time four-star safety from Nashville?
That's what I was going to say. If you had asked me, that's what I would have told you would be the story of the day today, Keyshawn Lawrence.
Number 63 nationally when you take all the sites' rankings and put them into a composite. He is the number 3 safety in the country, the number 1 or number 2 player in the state of Tennessee, depending on what site you use. He is an elite prospect. And, you know, it is something we've kept in mind, the in-state recruiting. So over the last 3 days, 4 days, you've seen two big-time prospects, one a little bit bigger than the other, commit to Tennessee.
You mean in terms of size?
Well, I just mean ranking is what I meant. I mean, Cooper Mays is a big get, but he's more of a low four-star, whereas Keyshawn Lawrence is a high four-star.
I see.
Nothing against Cooper. We're happy to have him and all. But, yeah, I mean, I guess I could use it the other way around and say that Cooper is bigger.
He's heavier.
Yeah. But this Keyshawn Lawrence guy had a pretty good offer list. You beat out Alabama, Miami, LSU for his services, his recruitment video. Did you watch the recruitment video? Or his commitment video, I guess it would be?
I did.
Where he has the LSU gloves at first. He then replaces them with orange. Orange Nike, which Miami's Adidas still, right? I believe Miami's Adidas. So the gloves gave it away a little bit. Then you saw him walking across the bridge in Nashville, and he was wearing a Miami shirt. And then on the rewatch, the second time you watch it, you can see clearly that he has a Tennessee shirt under it. But at first, you just see the Miami one. And I didn't have the sound on at first, so I thought he was saying he was committing to the U. And then he rips the shirt off, takes the shirt off, and he's wearing Tennessee, and he says he's staying home. So Tennessee able to land another big-time prospect. And this one moves you into the top 25 nationally in recruiting. I believe when I checked, it had you right at 25, so you moved up six spots. A little bit of a tease. I was texting. People are saying, yeah, this is the first of a couple who are about to announce this week. So when we talked about those dominoes falling, Tennessee may be able to get some recruiting momentum, especially in state, which, by the way, I got your answer finally in terms of the dead period. Dead period here in recruiting goes until the third week of July. So for the next couple weeks, you're not going to hear of any visits or contact or have any reports. You'll have these guys having some time to think, and I would say you'll get a handful of guys making announcements.
Well, we've now got two guys in the top 10. In the state of Tennessee.
All right.
Keyshawn Lawrence and Cooper Mays.
Okay.
And we're the leader in the clubhouse for Jay Hardy and Tyler Barron.
Okay.
So that would give us four out of the top 10. One of those guys we won't get is Bryn Tucker, who goes to Catholic. He's an offensive guard committed to Clemson.
Yeah, he's going to Clemson.
Which is tough, considering he's in Knoxville. But
yeah, I mean, what can you do?
Yeah, what can you do? Good point.
And I mean, then, if Tennessee's. I have always wondered. When I say always, I mean like the last 3 or 4 years. As the state of Tennessee gets better at recruiting, or at least has more talent in state, what happens if Tennessee starts winning?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is an interesting breakdown because, so Bryn Tucker's one of those guys, right? And we've got two guys signed, and we're the leader in the clubhouse for two. So that's a total of five players, right? Out of the top 10.
Is that what you would say?
Well, no, I'm just looking at the top 10 of in-state guys on 247.
Okay.
So we got the guy in our backyard committed to Clemson.
Uh-huh.
We got two committed. We're in the leader in the clubhouse for two, so that's five.
Who are the two you consider us the leader in the clubhouse for?
That's just what this says. Tyler Barron
at
Catholic and Jay Hardy out of Chattanooga.
He's the one that's McCauley, right?
Yes. So the interesting thing, though, about the other five, which I found interesting, I found this interesting.
I'm sure they're like, what, LSU, Georgia, Bama, or LSU? I feel like LSU's always got a – LSU has a nice little pipeline to the mid-state, it seems like. It seems like they're always kind of grabbing a couple top 10 guys.
None of them are committed, but
we got one going to the West Coast, maybe. I feel like we got one that usually goes to, like, Oregon or something like that, Stanford.
No, I was just going to say four out of those five guys
uh-huh.
are from Memphis.
Ah. Which, you know, sometimes we consider that in-state. Sometimes we say it's Mississippi. So we'll right. see.
And then the other guy is Reggie Grimes, who's the number one player in the state out of Ravenwood.
Okay.
And we're in the mix for him.
Yeah, least. I don't think we're considered in the lead, though.
No. Alabama's his leader right now.
What does he play?
So that should be fun.
What position does he play?
He's defensive end.
Okay.
Weak side.
Which, okay.
I just thought it was interesting. Four of the other guys in the top 10 that are not really considering us are all based out of Memphis.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to get beat out in Memphis by the Alabamas of the world. And
or the Ole Misses or Mississippi States or LSUs or somebody. That's fine. Again, I would like to see how we could do in-state recruiting coming off of a 9-win regular season. That'd be fun, right? To see like if you actually had some real sustained excitement around here.
Well, yeah.
And I think even when it comes down to this class you're putting together already, it's maybe you don't have to win to keep all of them, but you're going to have to show something on the field this year, right? Going to have to show something on the field this year. David Ubben did his weekly mailbag on did his weekly mailbag on The Athletic, and he was asked, and he's still, you know, relatively new to Knoxville, all things considered. He was asked about what he thought was a acceptable number of wins for this football season. And I found his answer to be interesting. And instead of, you know, having him on to talk about it, I'll just tell you kind of what he said after the break and get your thoughts on that. And we'll plug The Athletic. It's not like we're just stealing his content and then, you know, not plugging them. It's worth the $3, I think. So I talk about it favorably. So we'll kind of give his answer and get Cody's answer on what he thinks is acceptable in 2019.
Got a feeling I'm not going to agree.
Nah, I don't think that's necessarily – well, I don't know. I think you might try to disagree with it just because you seem to have an axe to grind against paid content.
It's just a hill I'm willing to die on.
I don't hear you puffing that chest out when we have your guy Jesse on from VolQuest, but okay.
That's good content.
Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. All right, Cody. You want to give your answer first as to is there a win total you deem respectable this year? You want to have the first crack at it, or do you want me to read what, you know, relatively new to the beat writer David Ubben said?
I don't like his tweets.
I mean, it's fun.
He's
I think his take. I don't disagree with his take though on what he said when asked in his mailbag. What reasonable expectation for wins is this year? So I'm 12. Asking, do you want to give your take first or you just want to respond to his?
12.
12 for Ben Lee. Okay, cut your mic off, Ben.
8.
8 is your answer.
Is that his answer too?
We'll get to his answer in a second.
You're asking
I'm asking
me
what your official take is now. As we sit here.
Acceptable?
June 25th. Here's the question. What do you think would be a reasonable expectation for fans to have when it comes to how many games Tennessee will win this year?
8.
8. So 8 is your number?
Yes.
Are you taking context into it all, or are you just going to look and say 8 at the end of the year? Because, as David put it, he says, let's say Tennessee goes 8-4, 7-5. But gets whacked by Bama and Georgia by 30 points, loses by 24 to Florida, and loses by 17 to Missouri and is never really in it, but you get to 8 wins. Do you consider that more successful than winning 6, but being in every game and just kind of coming up short against Alabama and Georgia and blowing a lead against Florida and losing in overtime to Missouri? Like, is it wins and losses, or is it measuring on the field? Because I think that's a fair stipulation to put on the win total. Do you view 8-4 with blowouts more favorably than 6 wins where you're in every game?
I still am taking 8 over 6, okay, no matter what, because what that tells me is that even if we get whacked against our rivals, it tells me that we're now better than Vanderbilt, first and foremost.
Yeah.
We're better than South Carolina.
Right.
We're still better than Kentucky. We were better than BYU, and we were better than Mississippi State.
Okay.
We were better than the other team on 8 out of 12 Saturdays.
So,
and we got a little ways to go to catch our rivals who are loaded with talent.
So you would come out of that saying you have a little ways to go because you held up the little – you held up a centimeter like –
I'd say that we – I could take a bad showing against a Missouri. What's he saying Florida's going to beat us by how much?
24.
So I think you have two bad days there against Florida and Missouri.
Okay.
Alabama and Georgia, you're expecting to get blown out.
And Florida and Missouri would be on the road.
Right. So, yeah, I'm taking eight all day. There's no scenario where I'm taking six and, well, we lost six, but we played close.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree with the take. I don't agree with the take. It just changed my thinking a little bit, or at least made me think.
You remember 2015?
Yep.
That was the year where we lost four games by a combined 17 points, was it?
That is correct.
We came out of that year feeling pretty good, but we still won eight games.
Right, but did we not feel better about those four losses and the four losses in 2016? Not that – I mean, I get that expectations were different and all that stuff, but it did feel like you were closer coming out of 2015 than it did coming out of 2016, correct?
It's also different because it was – you know, with it being the following year,
uh-huh.
2016, part of the reason it hurt so much is because you were building off 2015.
Sure.
So
right, I know it's not exactly apples to oranges, even though fruit can be compared, but it's just
more like a pineapple and a watermelon in that situation.
And I don't really like watermelons, but I do like pineapples.
Yeah, what do you not like about watermelon?
I don't know. I've just never liked them. I feel like
cause seeds.
Seeds have a lot to do with it. When I was younger,
I eat the seeds.
Well, I did too when I was younger, and it was never good for me. And one time, I got one stuck in my nose. It was just an ordeal. And
did your
I feel like on the farm we ate way too many watermelons, so I just didn't like them as a kid. Pretty much every day in the summer, Pops would crack open a watermelon to feed us for, like, dessert or sometimes just for dinner, and I just didn't like it.
Did your family used to tell you that if you eat too many seeds, it'll grow a watermelon in your stomach?
Yeah.
That's what happened to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually a sunflower seed I got stuck in my nose, not a watermelon seed. It was a sunflower seed, and it got stuck up there, so then I was convinced the sunflower was going to grow up my nose. A very stressful couple hours for me. Very stressful couple hours for me when that thing was stuck in my nose.
Imagine growing a watermelon out of your nose.
It's a sunflower, thank God. But yeah, a watermelon would be even worse.
That's a big booger.
I just remember I went and laid down in the bed and tried to go to sleep. And when I woke up, it had fallen out. So
yeah.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
But I was very stressed. I remember to this day just the feeling of dread I had of having that thing stuck in my nose.
You blow your nose enough times.
It'll eventually come out. Maybe.
Or you wouldn't want to sniffle up too much.
I know.
So you get a watermelon seed and it goes to your brain.
You're in trouble.
Then you got a watermelon growing in your brain.
That's,
you end up looking like Stewie Griffin.
That is correct.
That's what happens there. So.
Watermelons. Yeah, I don't really like watermelons.
Yeah. The football thing, though. I'm taking eight. I don't think you could get me to take six, even if we lost every game by 1 point. If you give me just eight versus six, I mean, that seems pretty simple, but I'm taking eight.
Okay. It did make me think, though, the thought process. Because, we're in this for wins, right? And eight wins versus six wins means you've beaten, like you said, some schools that you've lost against because you lose a lot of games. But you're also someone, Cody, who said not too long ago that you needed to beat a rival this year. You needed Jeremy Pruitt to beat Georgia, Florida, or Alabama this year. It wasn't very long ago that was your take. Like year two, you have to beat one of those guys. We're not far away from that.
I'm still standing by that. But in that scenario with six wins, I'm not beating a rival, right?
No, you're not. You're not.
So
do you take any moral victories? And look, I know it's already June and we're talking moral victories, but do you feel better about losing close to your rivals versus are you more demoralized for getting your ass beat by those rivals? Like, is there anything to that? Again, loss is a loss, and they're losses, and they count in the right column or the wrong column, I guess if you're looking at it that way. So do you take the score into account at all? Because you've put a lot of importance on these rivalry games with good reason, and Ben Lee quoted Philip Fulmer just last week saying it's about those three games.
Let me make myself absolutely clear. I would rather be disappointed four times than be disappointed six times.
Understandable.
Know what I mean?
Understandable. But I'm asking you from the lens of does it affect you with your rivals? because you, yourself, Cody McClure, a.k.a. Big Mac, a.k.a. McFourcourse Meal, you have said that you got to beat a rival. So I'm asking, is it more demoralizing to get blown out, or is it a loss of loss? Because you said we're just this close from a rival.
A loss is a loss.
Okay.
And if you were giving me 6-6 and we beat a rival, I might change my mind.
Sure.
But with what you're asking me, no. I mean, I got to go a loss is a loss here. A loss is a loss is a loss times three.
Sure.
Times two. Three losses times two. Six losses.
What about if I didn't even guarantee you beat a rival that it's just 6-6, but you might beat one of those rivals? Like, I'm not telling you what six you lose.
I might lose to Georgia State.
You might.
I might lose to UAB.
You might.
No, I'm done with 6-6. I don't give a damn how close the games are. I'm done with 6-6.
I'm curious if people agree with that take.
I think people agree with me.
I'm not saying they don't, and I'm not even saying I disagree, because we just need wins, right? Like, that's why, you know, last week when we did this or that, and it was Missouri versus Florida, it might have been 2 weeks ago, but it was Missouri, Kentucky, and Vandy versus just the Florida game. I was like, give me three, because we just need wins over people.
Well, look, here's the deal. Here's another thing about this scenario from The Athletic. Sure, you play your rivals. You lose six games, you play your rivals close, but that leaves three other games where you're playing close. Or not three games. Let's look at the two game difference in 6-8.
Mm-hmm.
That leaves two games against, I don't know, call it Mississippi State, BYU.
Yeah.
Where you lose to them, but at least you lost close.
Sure.
Whereas in the 8-win scenario, you beat both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the two game difference, to me, that scenario means more than just the rivalry games. Because it also, sure, you play Florida and Georgia close, but you also played BYU and Mississippi State close and you lost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's still that. There's just no way I can take 6-6 as being better.
Understandable.
Unless I won 8 against the Sun Belt or something.
Sure.
You know.
But sure. I mean, we're just looking at versus the same schedule.
I'm saying we got enough games against decent teams that we need to take the next step against.
Okay. So you would just, I mean, really, if you look at this. I mean, honestly, is it not more realistic to say it's Tennessee taking Tennessee's first goal should be to beat those teams? Like, if we're sitting here and we're just mapping it out, and regardless of what you said months ago about, well, you better beat one of those big three schools this year, because I don't want to say that feels unlikely, but it feels like a tall ask.
I still stand by that, though.
Well, you're kind of just straddling the fence now. You're kind of just taking both sides of it.
No, I'm not. It's a completely different scenario.
So you're still sitting here today saying you need to beat one of those three schools this year to have a successful year?
What do you mean by you need to beat?
I mean, you said in January.
For me to take you serious as a real coach.
Right, yeah. That you're not going to consider this season a success. You're not going to consider Pruitt as being good.
I don't think I said I won't consider this season a success.
You had the option to lock in the season as a success. You said no. It was 9-3 with losses to all three of those teams. You said, no, I'm not taking it.
I have a hard time believing I said 9-3 is unacceptable.
I gave you the option to lock in. You beat everybody except Florida, Georgia, and Bama, and you said no because it's about beating those three schools.
I don't think that's exactly how the question was posed.
We have very loyal listeners who will back this up.
No, I remember the conversation. Obviously, I'm going to take 9-3, though. But for me, yeah, what I'm saying is for me to take you serious as a coach, you need to beat Florida or Georgia this year. I stand by that. That doesn't mean I'm not going to lock in 8-4 or 9-3 or whatever. I'm not necessarily asking for a championship coach right now. I'm just asking for, you know.
Wins.
Yeah, just win some games.
Wins.
I think I'm not straddling the fence. I think I can have it both ways there.
So when I ask you what your – if we were to put together a checklist of what Tennessee needed to do, things they needed to accomplish, can you put together – like, do we have a path back towards success? Think about that question during the break, and we'll kind of continue this conversation on the other side. It's Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. I guess, Cody, the best way I could try to describe what I'm asking is what your roadmap / checklist is for long-term success here. Like, kind of what goals, what you see this progression being. In year two, in my mind, like, I think I kind of agree with your original point that the checklist should kind of just be showing that you can win games against teams like Mississippi State and BYU and South Carolina. I'm not really thinking about the rivals just yet. To me, that's something you think of in year three or year four. To me, like, 2019 isn't really about that. Do you understand what I'm saying now? Does that make a little bit more sense? In my head, the question makes sense. That's what I kind of give you an idea of what I'm thinking here.
I have my checklist.
Let's hear it.
Number one, land a top 10 recruiting class.
It's going to be hard to do before the football season here.
Well, I'm not. It doesn't have to be. You're just asking in the season, or to me, that's part of this season.
Okay. So that's the most important thing. That's number one. That's number one on the checklist. To you, that's the first step to returning.
I don't have mine ranked.
Okay.
That's just one of the five things I had.
Okay. So you just got a five thing to do list, not necessarily in order.
All right. How about I say you count it as part of, because the early signing period is, you know, end of December now.
Okay.
So I say now you got to call it part of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is. Yeah.
So land a top 10 recruiting class. I don't care if it's number 10, but I think you need to get it in the top 10. To be there, because that still might put you fifth or sixth in the SEC. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think to be there where you need to be, it's going to need to be top 10. Number two, again, these are not in order, just these are my five things. Number two, make Neyland Stadium a home advantage again this year.
Yeah.
You've got winnable home games. You need to win those games. You need to show off for your recruits that are coming in. So that kind of ties with recruiting, but I think it's a separate thing. You need to make Neyland Stadium a feared environment once again. You can't have it half full in November. We've gone through too many Novembers with Neyland Stadium having, you know, 50,000 people in there. That's ridiculous. It's not the fans' fault. It's because we haven't been able to put a product on the field worth going to see. Number three, go undefeated versus the non-conference. That's right. I'm throwing BYU in there. There's no excuse for losing to BYU.
I think that should be the first checklist here on this season. That I feel like that should be the bare minimum of what we're looking at. Well, go undefeated against the non-conference. If I'm making a checklist for the season, I think that's where I'm at. Just, hey, it's unacceptable. There's right. No scenario really where you should lose to either of those schools. Or any of those schools, because I guess right. There's more than two.
Our hope is that, and I know, again, these aren't apples and oranges, but our hope is that Jeremy Pruitt's better than Butch Jones as a coach. Butch Jones did not let Chucky Keaton come in here and beat him in year two.
That is true. No matter how many times they said that was an upset game, Tennessee was able to come in and make a statement from the jump.
What's the difference in Utah State and BYU? BYU's been a little better. But,
older
but
guys
still.
Who, like, go on missions, I feel like. Utah State have a lot of those?
I don't know. But I imagine the rosters are similar. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't know. I feel like the BYU – roster is probably a lot older in age.
Why?
Well, they go on, like, their Mormon missions or whatever for a couple of years. Like, usually their rookies are like 21, 22 years old.
Mormon missions?
Yeah, they have to go do like a, I don't know exactly what it is, but they have to go do something. Mission work, basically.
It's like a calling from the church. Like, everyone gets like a letter, basically, like at a certain time, and you have to go and just do mission work for your part in the church.
Yeah, they got things they got to go do. That's why their quarterbacks are always like 26 years old. Have you never noticed all their quarterbacks are like 26 years old?
That guy for the Saints, like Taysom Hill or whatever, like tight end, quarterback, whatever, he's like 24 and a rookie.
Yeah. He was here forever. Like,
I guess I never thought about why they're so old.
Yeah, yeah. They gotta go. You think they just recruit old guys? Like,
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean they got things they gotta go do.
Well, that's weird. Anyway, number four, nothing against the Mormon religion, but number four, defeat Vanderbilt and Kentucky handily. handily. Not beat Vanderbilt 10-7. Beat Vanderbilt like you should beat Vanderbilt. If you want me to take you seriously, beat the hell out of Vanderbilt.
I think if we're looking at this just through the lens of 2019, I disagree with that. I don't need handily. I just need wins. Now, granted,
I want you to kick Vanderbilt's ass.
Now, granted, the handily would help. Like, that'd make me feel better.
These four out of my first five here, I believe, are very bare minimum expectations. Because right now we're at six wins based on my first four criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Simply make your stadium a home field advantage again. Beat BYU, Vandy, and Kentucky, essentially. That's what I'm asking out of the first four, and land a top 10 recruiting class. But now here's how number one ties to number five. To land a top 10 recruiting class, you can't just go 6-6. And that's another reason that David Uber's piece is flawed. You go 6-6, you're not landing a top 10 recruiting class. My number five criteria, win two or preferably three against South Carolina, Mississippi State, Missouri, and Florida. I'm giving you a pass on Georgia and Alabama. I don't care if you take that week off. I don't care if you can forfeit the game. If it means you can beat Florida, if you need to take the Georgia game off to, you know, get things together for the rest of the schedule, fine. I'm giving you a pass two out of your 12 games. And then I'm saying win two or three. Carolina, Mississippi State, Missouri, Florida. I think that's fair. And that gets you to 8 or 9. It fits my taking you seriously for beating a rival if you can beat Florida.
All right, so let's look at this. So top 10 recruiting class, pretty self-explanatory, right? I mean, that's just you get a top 10 recruiting class.
It has to be 247 Sports. I trust them over the others.
I don't really like 247. I always gravitate that towards that, but just usually because they have the composite. I don't like their I like the composite scores. I don't like their just solo rankings.
If they have us at like 11 and Rivals puts us at 10, I'll take it. But
We were at 11 last year, right? Didn't we finish like at 11th last year?
Well, then we certainly shouldn't be lower this year.
And didn't we like am I wrong? Did we finish like 11th last year? And then like if you count for attrition and like transfers, we'd have been like a top 10 class now. Like isn't that where we were at?
Yeah. So why would we be
12th? Lower? I guess we were 12th.
Again, bare minimum expectation, right?
9th on like the composite score. So okay. Can I break it up? I would rather. I would assume we don't already have like a breakdown of number of guys we could take in this upcoming class, right? Do we have a number already floating around?
It's somewhere between 23 and 30.
20 and 25, I think. 20. I just didn't know how like Solomon and Gibbs were counting. Like they're already counting towards this upcoming class, right? I don't really know how that works. Either way. To me, I would say something like I need instead of a top 10 ranking, top 11 ranking, I would just be like I need 12 four stars or five stars. Like I think that would be more of a number. Maybe even like I need like 13 of those guys. 14 of those guys.
Okay.
Is that fair to say? Like, give me at least 3 5 stars. Like, is that being too nitpicky? Because I feel like, I feel like you win with blue chip talent. Like, depth is cool, depth is awesome, love it. I think it's more about blue chippers. Like, give me 5 top 250 players. Like, give me those guys. I don't really give a damn about the low 4 stars. They're cool. Like I said, I'm not disparaging them. You need those or whatever, but. I need 5 considered blue chippers in my recruiting class for it to be a success.
Well, you got 2 this past year, and both on the offensive line.
Right.
So you should be able to at least improve on that, I mean, get like an athlete or something.
I would say you came out – I mean, I'd say you came out with – I mean, Tennessee came out with blue chippers in this class. I mean, the bottom of the class is going to – you know, they're going to have to be developed or whatever. But, I mean, Darnell Wright, blue chipper, number 10 nationally. Wanya Morris, blue chipper, number 28 nationally. Henry To'o, number 44 nationally. Nailed it. Blue chipper. I mean, Corvarius Crouch was the number one prospect for a while. He ended up at 61. I'd consider him a blue chipper. And then depending on how far down the list you want to go, like if you're just looking at top 225 players, go ahead and throw in Ramel Keaton. He was number 111. Jalen McCullough, he was 156. Eric Gray was 184. Tyus Fields was 226. Jackson Lampley was 232. So, I mean, you came out with what? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 top 300 players. That's pretty good. I feel like that's going to end up being have a chance of being a really good recruiting class. Now, granted, you fell off with the four stars shortly after that, right? You went from that to a couple guys right outside the top 300, all the way down to your three stars, your low three stars. So, guys that are in like the 800s nationally. It's like you didn't have the depth, but I think you can come out of this and maybe we'll look back on this and say, you know what? You developed some backups, but you really had some cornerstones here like Wright and Wanya and and Crouch.
You get a few guys hurt, though, and then you're 2016. You know what I mean?
Like You are.
I really value that depth.
I know, but you're hoping that was your first year. You're hoping that some of these JUCO guys and these older guys, that's your depth, and that this upcoming class can kind of solidify that. I understand that.
And we have a strength and conditioning program now.
Right. Hopefully now we got these guys actually lifting weights instead of just stretching.
Ideally. So if I gave you 18 commitments and 5 were 5 stars and 13 were 4 stars.
Sign me up.
Would you take that over 25 4 stars?
Yeah. I mean, well, 25.
I don't know if I would.
25 4 stars, probably not. But
is that not fair?
But if you gave me 20 4 stars and 5 3 stars, I would rather take my chances with the 5 stars being worth 2 or 3 of the 3 stars.
Okay.
I mean, I want the top end guys, I'm saying.
I know what you're saying about the blue chips. I just wonder at what point is that more important versus depth? You know what I mean? Because I think you really got to have both.
I mean, you do to be like elite. I'm looking at this in phases, man. Like, we're not going to be elite next year or the year after that. Like, to be elite, that's going to be 4 or 5 years, right? Like, it's just how it's going to be.
That's going to be virtually impossible.
Because even comparing to what Kirby Smart did at Georgia, like, those guys already had a good foundation, right? Like, Mark Richt didn't just quit recruiting.
Yeah.
So he's able to just throw all these 5 stars on top, and boom, now we got the elite talent.
I guess I've been conditioned over the last few years to see a lot of blue chips bust or get hurt, But like Ben said, with a strength and conditioning program, hopefully that happens less often now.
From the pictures that we've seen from the team putting stuff out, looks like it's working.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think about the McKenzies and the Tuttles of the world and the Kyle Phillips and the, Preston Williams transfer injury.
Sure. And look, and recruiting rankings don't always matter. Like, we put way too much emphasis on this recruiting, on these recruiting rankings. I understand that, but there are the blue chippers usually end up being blue chippers just from my limited experience of keeping up with SEC recruiting. Like, for the most part, those guys, when they go to good positions or good schools, I don't know what the success rate is, but it feels exponentially higher than what Tennessee's had in terms of success rate, right?
Yeah, and sometimes, though, like you said, though, I mean, sometimes the recruiting services are a little off because you could get, there's a lot of times where a really high four-star, like a 96 overall or something, might end up being quite a bit better than some of the blue-chip five-stars, like a Derek Barnett.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure. I mean, Derek Barnett, I'm looking at it right now. Derek Barnett was all the way down but he was all the way down to 209th nationally, and I would say he was one of the 10 best players or the 15 best players in this recruiting class. Sure.
Yeah.
Look, and like I said, recruiting is – I don't want to call it stupid – but I feel like these guys are kind of just making some stuff up, and they're 17, 18-year-old guys, and you are guessing and projecting what they can be. Because, look, no one will ever put Todd Kelly Jr., no offense to him, but he was ranked 64th nationally. You couldn't line him up next to Derek Barnett and, try to convince somebody he's going to be a better prospect and a better player than Derek Barnett. And maybe we're gifted with the gift of hindsight, but...
Yeah.
Derek Barnett was a beast from day one on campus.
Like, I mean, he holds the sack record.
I mean, but he was a beast from day one. It's not like he was a diamond in the rough who worked really hard.
No, that guy showed up on campus. Right in and showed you that he should have been rated a 5-star.
That guy showed up and was ready to wreck SEC offensive lines. Like I said, it's not a late bloomer situation. It was a guy who showed up on campus and was one of the baddest men on campus from day one.
Wrecked him for 3 years.
Right. So that's not always an exact science. Like Dylan Bates, again. No offense to the guy. Top 100 prospect. I can't name one play made here at Tennessee.
He never did.
Right. So, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, you could probably find a couple kickoff tackles.
I don't know if you can.
Yeah, maybe not. Huh?
I don't know if you could.
A couple of punt return blocks.
To quote our deceased head coach, you've had more girlfriends here than tackles.
Yeah.
I mean, he just needed one girlfriend.
Which, when you look back at the college experience, hey, maybe that's what matters.
He just needed one girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like, that's not saying much.
And I think he did have the same girlfriend all through college.
Well.
That's a shame.
At that point, you're looking and saying, oh, maybe we should have got at least two tackles, so that wouldn't be true anymore. But, you know.
So, are all of BYU's players older?
I don't know if all of them are, but I know. Seems
like an unfair advantage.
Junior and senior class are.
Seems like an unfair advantage. Not that I'm scared of them, but I'm saying just on average against the Mountain West or wherever they're at, or they used to be independent, didn't they? Are they independent? Nah, they're not independent.
They're in the Mountain West, yeah.
I mean, it seems like an unfair advantage against the Mountain West, and they get to do this. Why?
They have to go and.
It's a religion thing. You can't like
support.
Yeah,
Joseph Smith and do their thing there. Like I don't exactly know.
Did Joseph Smith tell them to do this?
I don't know. I'm looking. I mean, like their official roster doesn't have age on it.
Is he still around? Are his descendants still around? Do they like run the Mormon Church, or how does that work?
I don't. I'm not very familiar with it. I don't know. All right. So this is from 2018. Okay. Here's 2018. Starting, this is a piece. Here's what this is called. BYU fans want you to stop talking about their football team's age.
I'm sure they do.
Every year, BYU Cougars have several players who are much older than your typical student athlete. Starting quarterback Tanner Magnum will be 25 in early September, making him older than NFL quarterbacks. And 6 years older than his counterpart on Saturday, Arizona quarterback Khalil Tate. All right, so the reason for this is many BYU players serve two-year missions as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Per the school, again, this is 2018, 65% of BYU's roster has served a mission. Those players have 6 years to play four. So I don't know how that guy ended up being 25, but usually they're at least, on average, 2 years older.
What if?
So freshmen are coming at, like, age 20 already.
What if we, and hear me out on this, established like some sort of East Tennessee religion? Because that's one of those things you can't really touch, you know what I mean?
It's true.
You say, hey, these are my religious beliefs, you got to deal with it. They, you know, that's a right I have. Just saying, maybe we get players to do certain things or something, and then like, you know, our players don't have to live up to your academic standards because it's part of our religion. Our players can only be 20 years of age and up because it's part of our religion.
Can we get religious exemptions if we just pump them full of HGH? Can we say HGH, that's a part of our worshiping?
HGH to us is like wine to Catholics.
That's true.
It's like holy water.
We want our athletes. We believe strongly in the body of the Christ. Jesus was very strong.
Father,
that's true. He was a carpenter. I think many people don't understand that Jesus probably had to be ripped to be a carpenter.
I don't. Are carpenters notoriously ripped? Like,
I mean, you got to be strong. You're building stuff.
I mean, I understand, but I know woodworkers.
And like, it's olden days. It's old. Like, he had to like lift.
I know woodworkers who are like 65, 70 years old.
He was working with rocks.
I'm just.
He had no tools.
I just don't know if I'm picturing shredded Jesus.
His
I don't
tools,
know like
his
I,
tools
oh,
were
shredded.
His, when his I, tools shredded. Were his hands.
When I think of carpenters, I just don't think of jacked. I mean, I'm not. I don't think he's chubby. I don't think Jesus was chubby.
How did he do all that work in a robe, by the way?
So we've established our own East Tennessee church, and we believe that instead of communion, instead of wine, we will pump you full of HGH because we want the body to perform at its peak. At his peak.
Father, Chad, grant me thy holy tyrannoball.
Chad sends in, this is from 2017, but apparently 32 of BYU's players in the 2017 season, 2018 season, were married. And,
oh, this is ridiculous. 32 were married?
32 of them were married.
You get married at 18, though. No. Like, it's not really an accomplishment.
How many guys we got that are married?
It said the average age was basically 22 years old, 21 and a half, and their first opponent, LSU, their average age was 19.
Didn't really help them. I don't. Did they beat?
I don't think so.
No, they got killed by it. They got killed. I believe LSU murdered them.
Yeah, LSU pounded their eyes.
They murdered them. So, like, it doesn't necessarily work, and it probably doesn't have – like, they probably haven't figured out how to make it work to their advantage for athletics. Maybe they don't really care, but
– might care.
Our church.
Rip Jesus.
We kind of care.
I mean, even if they're older, BYU's players in general are probably not going to be as athletic as SEC players.
And I think they claim, their fans do at least from this piece right here, that their players lose athleticism when they do the missions. Because it's not like they're getting to train. They're having to...
They can't work out on their mission trips?
I mean, not like to the same extent as a Division I athlete does.
You can do push-ups and all that kind of stuff, I'm sure.
And they're probably carrying, like, buckets of water. Like,
how long do these trips last?
2 years.
2 years.
We've
established that.
So they just go to some place for 2 years?
Yeah, it's just like mission work. Like,
are you familiar
I'm
with
not
mission
familiar
work?
With mission work.
Like, churches would go and, like, build churches and build schools and... hospitals and stuff like that to try to help spread Christianity.
They just go into other people's countries and just start building their churches?
They go to poor places, yes, poor places that don't have the infrastructure. Well, it's imposing, I guess, but it also is good because they now have schools and hospitals and churches, and then as you're there, you do what you're supposed to do as a Christian, which is try to lead someone to the Lord.
Like, it's one of the, like, more, like, it's across most churches. It's not just a Mormon thing.
Oh, yeah. No. My church goes to places. They don't really go to – I mean, I think for a while people were going to Haiti and stuff, but I think our church goes a lot to, like, Ukraine for some reason. They go to Ukraine all the time. I don't
– There's recently been a big push of, like, let's just help ourselves before we start helping everybody else.
I mean, that's fun. That's fair, whatever.
No, yeah, but yeah, you're right. People do go to Haiti a lot. My brother went to Haiti a couple
times.
Yeah,
I feel like Haiti's a popular one.
Normal churches take 2 years to do this?
No, mine's like a month
or a couple weeks.
So the Mormons, they just take like 2 years away from their jobs and their families
A lot of it in like other churches, maybe not Mormons, but like is like youth groups doing like 2 week trips or like a week trip to a place, like helping out, really getting some free child labor out of it.
Guess it's good to do good things. I don't know.
I think that's the idea behind it, yeah.
It's not something I would do.
No, so, I mean, like I said, I feel like we need at least, like, 15 or 16 blue chippers. Like, 4 stars, 4 stars, 5 stars. Like, I don't consider Cooper Mays, again, I keep picking on Cooper Mays. He's just committed. Sorry, Cooper, if you're listening.
He's a local guy.
I mean, sorry if you're listening. I'm just saying I don't consider him a blue chipper just yet. That's not who I'm talking about. This guy from yesterday, I consider him a blue chipper. Keyshawn Lawrence, that's a blue chipper. If LSU wants you, blue chipper. I don't want to say that about Miami because, I mean, Miami fans got some nerve if you go through and read the comments on his video. Like, really, you're going to trash Tennessee? Chill out, Miami. You're not in much better position than we are, okay? You're not doing that much better than we are. You're doing a little bit better, but not much better.
Oh, it'll be a matter of time. If it hasn't already happened, their fans will stop showing up down there.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
they'll have like 8 people at the game.
I mean, yeah, that's what happened to Mark Rigg. That's why Mark Rigg got fired or resigned, retired, whatever the hell he did.
Yeah, I think they let him retire.
Yeah, they wanted Mark Rigg out of town.
They let him retire because he's a Miami guy. So, like, yeah, we'll let you retire. We won't can you, but you're fired.
Establishing Neyland Stadium. We got, what, 8 home games this year? So, really, in the grand scheme of things, I think Tennessee fans are really just asking you to win 7. Like, we'll give up the Georgia game. We're really just asking you to win the 4 non-conference games. Georgia State, BYU, Chattanooga, UAB. And really just beat Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Vandy. Like, that's really all you got to do to make it a pretty successful season.
I'm going to add one thing. I'd like to see if we could get a local mission to renovate the south side of Neyland Stadium. I think that needs to be next on our to-do list.
For our church?
Find a church, a local church.
No, the church we're starting for the football program.
Oh, yeah.
The church
of Rip
Jesus.
Any church.
And other things.
I just think it's time to renovate the south end, okay? I know a lot of people are against that. I think it's an eyesore.
The church of Rip Jesus.
Whoever wants to do it. I just think that'd be a good mission.
HGH. Protein, creatine.
Winstrol.
Hour 1 in the books, hour 2 on deck. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio.